Is Roger right about I'm the One? Roger Charlton believes that John Gorsden has found the next in Abel in Friday's runaway Newbury winner. We'll be talking about her, all the classic trials from last week. We'll be asking who will be crowned Racing Post Jumps Horse of the season, and also asking if the BHA should revisit the whip rules again. All that and more on this week's edition of The Front Page. Yes, hello, welcome to this week's edition of The Front Page. We're in that crossover period. We're talking about flat racing and jump racing, and the people doing the talking are myself, Lee Mottershead, and my Racing Post colleague, Lewis Porteous. Hello, Lewis.
Hi, Lee.
And our Lambourne correspondent, Liam Head. Hello, Liam.
Hi, Lee.
And Liam and myself were at Newbury on Saturday for the second day of their spring trials weekend, and the 2 days at Newbury and the 3 days at Newmarket beforehand yielded plenty in terms of classic pointers and discussion points. We'll start with Newbury. And then if we first of all look at the two, established, recognised classic trials, the Greenham and the Fred Darling. We had the Fred Darling first of all, with Sukanya beating Too Lean in a bit of a blanket finish to the fillies trial for the Guineas. And then we had the Colts in the Greenham with Al Parslan winning for Clifford Lee and Carl Burt beating Zavateri, with the much talked about Albert Einstein back in third. What did you make of those two races, Liam?
Yeah, they were both interesting. I mean, like you said, they're kind of renowned for being, classic trials for the Guineas coming up at Newmarket in May. But like I wrote in our inside track column after Newbury, they kind of both left you with more questions than answers, really. Given that, you know, Tulane was, I think, going into the race, she was, I think, third favourite for the 1,000 Guineas for Owen Burrows. Obviously, she had a very good year last year, and she was, you know, the most talked about horse going into the Fred Darling, and I thought she ran well, and Owen Burrows was, you know, pretty pleased with what he saw. He did look a little bit deflated, because I think you kind of, when they're going off close to favourite and the odds that she went off, you kind of expect them to just do everything that they've been showing at home, and I do think there's a lot more to come from her. But Sukanya obviously sprung a little bit of a surprise, went off at 16-1, I think, for Jack Shannon, who had a double on the day and has had a great season so far. He obviously won the Lincoln at Doncaster in March, so he's winning all the big races at the minute. And I think from speaking to Jack, he wasn't surprised at all. He said that the last 2 weeks, she's really been showing an awful lot at home, and he'd been telling a lot of people that he didn't expect her to finish outside the first three. So, again, she'd been competing in some of the big races last year. She finished behind Precise and Diamond Necklace at in two runs. I think the sort of decision that Jack has to make now, obviously, if she was to go for the English 1,000 Guineas, she'd have to be supplemented, whereas she's already got an entry into the Irish Guineas. And I think by the sounds of what Jack was saying after the race, I think that he's more likely to go down that route. So in terms of the 1,000 Guineas, it doesn't really tell us an awful lot, because Tulane's obviously drifted now to, I think she's 20-1. So in terms of that race, that was quite tricky to sort of solve out what was going to happen in the big race at Newmarket next month.
Lewis, the two trials, I suppose, that the most talked about horse going into them was Albert Einstein. This hugely hyped horse from Ballydoyle. Aidan O'Brien has given him rave reviews as a two-year-old. He was disappointing on his return at the Curragh. More encouraging at Newbury on Saturday, but still finished third behind Zavateri and Alpars. And what do you make of him and the race?
In terms of Albert Einstein, I think he was probably underwhelming again, really.
Yeah.
It was just, we've been told about this blistering speed, yet it just wasn't evident. I mean, even before stamina became a real question, he didn't sort of leap into the bridle and go and chase down the winner. And yeah, it's a confusing one because you listen to the hype and they obviously believe in that horse at home, but he's just not going to plan at the moment, and it's a real question of what do you do now. You'd have wanted him to be explosive and not finish the trip out, and you'd have had answers then. But instead, you're a bit in no man's land. I just wonder, they've gone so far down the mile experiment route. Do they just continue now and roll the dice in the guineas and then draw a line under it and come back to sprinting? You feel a little bit for the horse. I get the impression he wants to jump and run. And until we see that, we might not see the real Albert Einstein. But at the moment, you've got to say he's not really living up to the hype that's come out of the stable.
No, he's not, is he? Liam, and Carl Burke, who won the race with Alparslan, and he could go to Newmarket, or he might not go to Newmarket. He has got loads of options. Carl won the John Porter Stakes, the race that we thought we might get Constitution Hill in, but we didn't. He won that with Convergent, who was very impressive, was trapped on the fence for a while. William Haggis was saying he'd have been the unluckiest loser of the year so far had he not won, and it would have won a minute had he got Daylight all the way. Carl could not have been more enthusiastic when he was speaking about this horse afterwards.
No, absolutely. I mean, we were sort of stood next to him when he was, reacting to the performance, and, you know, he was comparing sort of Convergence to Al Kareem as well, you know, these sort of, these stayers, and obviously Convergent looks like a superstar in the making over a mile and a half now, and I think the Coronation Cup was touted as his possible sort of big summer aim on Derby Day at Epsom. So, really exciting, as you said. I mean, he was I think, with or without Constitution Hill in the race, Convergent was probably going to be the one that would be sort of the biggest test for Constitution Hill, I think, in that race. But obviously he didn't turn up, and Convergent obviously showed his class, and again it's as you mentioned a lovely double for Carl Burke and Clifford Lee, who's made a remarkable comeback to even just get back into the saddle, let alone getting back into the saddle and being at the very top like he was before his incident. He's got two very nice horses there to go to war with for the rest of the season.
And Liam, Constitution Hill, who you spend a lot of time writing about as our Lambourne correspondent. I was speaking to Nicky Henson on Saturday at Newbury. He was guest of the sponsors there. He was indicating at that point that he thought the horse might well now go off on his summer holidays. He's been on the go since October. They want to train him towards an early autumn campaign, and the reality surely now is that if you do keep him in training, you're always likely to come across a sort of ground on which they would not want to run him.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think this week or last week there was a lot of talk whether he turned up or he wouldn't because of the ground, and I think now as the sort of the summer approaches, now the ground's only going to get quicker, and the likelihood of seeing Constitution Hill run now again between, you know, now and sort of the end of August is pretty unlikely, I would have thought. I mean, it looks like we're due a bit of a dry spell, and I think as he said to you, Lee, he's Constitution Hill's been on the go since August, really. So this would be naturally when he would go out for his summer break anyway. So it just makes sense to send him out for a few months and freshen him up, and then hopefully come in and target the big autumn races when the ground gets a bit more slower.
Liam, you're going to be on overtime here because I want to stick with you for a second, because you were also at Newbury on Friday when perhaps we had the most interesting and informative and maybe the best performance or best performer of the weekend going forward, potentially, in this John and Thady Gosden trained filly, I'm the One, who ran away with what is always an informative, deep and poured over mile and a quarter filly's maiden. She's now 5-1 favourite for the Oaks. And Liam, it wasn't only John and Thady Gosden who were talking about her.
No, exactly. I mean, just on her performance, I think you only have to look at the reaction with the bookmakers making a favourite for the Oaks to really sort of tell you how impressive the performance was. I mean, there was a few of us in the press room at Newbury on Friday, and we were all sort of really surprised in the manner in which she won. She obviously couldn't have done any more, and dare I say it, she looks like a superstar in the making. You know, in a race that, like you said, is often given us a couple of clues going forward for the rest of the season. It was interesting because in the lead up to the race, Roger Charlton was at Newbury, and he said along the lines of he thinks the next Enable is in the next race, talking beforehand about I'm the one. So for a trainer of his calibre to say something like that, and you know, we have trainers that and you know, we're all sort of guilty of it sometimes, comparing young horses to these superstars, but that was quite the comparison before the horse had even run. So there's obviously been a reputation of this horse in Newmarket in the lead up to this debut and her possible campaign and where she goes. So it's going to be really interesting to sort of follow her next steps and see what connections do. Obviously, I think John Gosden played it down after she won. But listen, you can only be impressed with what you've seen. And listen, another really impressive prospect for the yard who you know, Water to Wine won impressively on Saturday as well. And I'm sure we're going to touch on it. They had a nice winner at Newmarket during the week as well.
Yeah, they did. Lewis, before we go on to Newmarket, what do you make of I'm the One? So she's 5-1 Guineas favourite now. She's clear of any Ballydoyle filly in the Oaks betting. John was joking after the race that Ashim Murphy must have been bigging her up to people because he'd seen how good she is. Even the name suggests she's probably pretty smart. Do you think we've seen the Oaks winner?
It's still early days. You can look impressive with a maiden, and then it can sometimes look a bit different when you go into a trial. I mean, I presume they'll go Chester because she's lightly raced, and that will really educate her around there. And Abel went that route. Mm. It was basically the worst kept secret, wasn't it? Which says she must have been tearing up the gallops, which some of these horses, they always say, they don't show me much at home. Clearly she does. Yeah. She's incredibly exciting. 5-1 short enough, in my opinion, until she's running a trial. But I mean, the yard has got a lot of previous. They know a good filly when they see one, and clearly she's high class. I mean, just in general, Clare Haven, they look like they're stacked, don't they? Yeah. There's a lot of these unraced or lightly raced three-year-olds coming out now that they've been given time at two. They could be absolutely anything. So they're going to have an incredibly strong season by the looks of things.
Well, let's just touch on a couple of those three-year-olds if we talk about an older horse. Craven Meeting at Newmarket, they won the Craven Stakes with Oxygen.
Yes.
Again, Ashim Murphy riding, a horse who had very good two-year-old form and now obviously heads on to 2,000 guineas. But in some ways, I think the horse that got people even more interested from the Craven Meeting was the Royal Runner, King and Queen's Portcullis, who absolutely dotted up in the wood, didn't?
Absolutely incredible, yeah. Sort of fell out of the stalls, didn't seem to know what he was doing, and then he's come through on the bridle and romped away from him. There was talk that Ryan maybe didn't realise just how far clear he was, which is a sign of a very good horse. They're probably going to go a quiet route with it, another maiden, but you've got to look at Royal Ascot. There'll be a race there for him, no doubt. It's quite romantic with the Royal Silks and things like that. So he created a real buzz, that horse. I think he took everyone by surprise, really.
Yeah, you'd be thinking, wouldn't you, that if he was really impressive next time out, they might think about St James's Palace. But the Hampton Court Stakes, Group 3 over 10 furlongs, looks made for him.
That's it. You've got your two options, haven't you? You can go a quieter route or step him up. I don't know, could see him in a heron towards the St James's Palace. Or you've got options, but it could be a horse that's good this year and outstanding at four. Yeah. It could be that sort of horse. So really good. Oxygen in the Craven, as you said, he's got form around the right horses last year, and it was a step forward. He was uncomplicated. I just a bit tempered that there was sort of only five runners. I don't really know. It wasn't the deepest Craven. I don't really know. It told us an awful lot, other than he looks a bit more malleable, if you like, this season, and he's more than entitled to have a crack at the Guineas, but he's double figure odds still, and that's probably suggests whereabouts he's in the pecking order. I thought it was a bit disappointing there was only five turned up in maybe what has a long time be the premier sort of 2000 Guineas classic, 2000 Guineas trial. There just seems to be this this fascination with racecourse gallops at the moment, and there was as many galloping as there were in the Craven. I find that a little bit disappointing. I think you learn so much more from a trial. It was great to hear sort of E. Johnson and say about Zavaretti and the Greenham, just how much more she thought that race would have brought it on compared to a gallop. And surely this is the time of year you want to learn something. John Gosden even alluded to it himself. He kind of said it's they should be running in trials and not galloping. I understand why trainers do it. They get to set their own parameters and they can look good in a gallop, but it just seems strange that all these horses are running before the Craven at Newmarket, yet the Craven itself's only got five runners. That's disappointing for the for spectators, really.
Yeah. There were a lot of smart horses trialling last week, including Liam Venetian, son of Carl Birch. He went to Southwell on Thursday, worked over a mile, apparently worked well against horses, including Fallen Angel, although she's not a great work performer, Carl said. And one of the horses we've not mentioned from the trials, Azleet, was a smashing winner of the Nell Gwynn for Stuart Williams and Marco Gianni. Another to add into the Guineas mix, albeit a big price outsider still.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was just nice to see Stuart Williams have a nice sort of horse going for the season. Just adds a bit more sort of colour to these classics. And sometimes, you know, when you're in a win a race like that, you know, you've just got to roll the dice, because I do think, as much as, like you said, we've not seen some of these favourites and second favourites and so on, sort of in a race yet, but a lot of them, like Lewis said, have had gallops and they're going to go straight for their intended classic assignment. It just adds a bit more flavour. I do think they are wide open this year, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, that then wraps up our flat discussion. We'll be looking at some of the big news stories of the last week in the final section of the show. Before we do that, let's go to the jumps. The season ends in Britain on Saturday at Sandown. Before that, we've got a good meeting at Perth, and we had a very good meeting at Ayr on Friday, Saturday. Lewis, a really popular winner of the Scottish National Cup there for Philip Hobbs and Johnson White. You've had a really promising, encouraging and rewarding season.
Resurgent, wouldn't you? You'd have to call it that. Yeah. They've got a lot of nice horses. Sober Glory obviously comes to mind. It's great to see people like that back in the spotlight. You know, class is permanent, as they say, and it's a big yard, deserves to have great horses. And it was a thoroughly convincing victory. It's quite interesting that horse is only a six-year-old. It only had four runs over fences, and it just shows a sort of changing way sort of trainers do sort of target these big staying chases now. They're not a lot more of the time younger horses, progressive horses are being pitched in to these races on the way up and are doing well in them. So it was sort of it's quite a heartwarming victory, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was a rare big race in which Dan Skelton wasn't represented this season. He's been winning everything. He's got the Chumps Cheese and the Chumps Championship wrapped up by a country mile. There's an interview that I did with him in the Racing Post on Sunday, digitally on Saturday night. You can get that online. Members can see that, in which he was very candid talking about some recent gambles that the yard had pulled off and his mindset in relation to those. His desire not to be beige, which I think we can all say Dan is definitely not beige. Not sure, he was saying, how he'll feel when he receives a trophy on Saturday. You know, will it be enough? He wasn't sure if the catch would turn out to be better than the hunt. And it's also interesting, though, he's talking about how he mapped out winning this season's championship, very methodical in what he had to do month by month, and in saying that next season, when he's hoping that, because he's got all these stars from this season, that he should be hopefully on the way to championship again. But his main aim is to try and beat Martin Pipe's record for the number of jumps winners in a season, 243. So he's very target-driven, both in terms of individual races and career trajectory.
Yeah, but it's incredible that we're not even at the end of the season.
Yeah.
And he's already, he's looking down the line to next season and, right, what records can I set next year? And he's put Pipes Total in front and centre. So, yeah, I think that's just, it's just a mindset of a champion, isn't it? And a guy who doesn't seem to ever tire, you know. Most people might think, I might want an easy week in May, but he clearly doesn't. He wants to set new boundaries. And I think that's really the question. Where do these boundaries now lie? Like, no one thought getting even close to 5 million would be possible. Yet he's right on the cusp now. He's had a winner at every jumps course this season, bar Perth, which he'll do this week.
Yeah.
The records just keep tumbling. And we are definitely going to see a period of just domination from Skelton. And I just hope that inspires other trainers and they can latch onto his coattails and make it competitive. But he deserves it. He set out to achieve it. He didn't get downbeat when he had the title snatched away from him last season. Instead, it was, right, how am I going to do this? And he's got his little notebook. He's got his target of winners. He's got his prize money totals. And he goes about and does it. And he's bang on target for it. I mean, I think the 5 million thing would be sensational.
Yeah, I completely agree. One thing he hasn't got is one of the 6 nominated horses for Racing Post Jumps Horse of the Season.
Okay.
Which we've been asking you, Racing Post readers and viewers, to vote on. If you haven't voted yet and you want to, and you want a bit of a steer, then I know 2 people who can give you one. Just before we ask Lewis and Liam what they think, the nominees are I Am Maximus, Gaelic Warrior, The Jukebox Man, Old Park Star, Il Est Etant, and Lossy Mouse. So 4 of the 6 trained by Willie Mullins, which shows you again where the overall domination remains across British and Irish jump racing. Liam, for me, it would be Gaelic Warrior, because I thought his Gold Cup win was the visually most impressive, stunning performance of the season, albeit Iron Maximus is now a dual Grand National winner. So he gets my vote. Who gets your vote?
I'm joking. My one, I Am Maximus. I just think the Grand National is the race that you know, everyone wants to win. It's the biggest race of the year, and I think to come back from winning the race in 2024 to then finishing a narrow defeat last year, to then coming back and winning it again in spectacular fashion, carrying an awful lot of weight. I just think he's proven himself to be absolutely top class, and I think he deserves to be found number one, really.
What about you, Lewis?
I think Old Park Star's the only unbeaten horse on that list, which probably says a bit about this season. There hasn't been horses dominating divisions left, right and centre, but I'd agree with you. You rarely see a Gold Cup win in that manner, yeah. And that was probably the performance that stands out for me. So I'd go Gaelic Warrior, but it's not been a season where we've had a constitutional dominate the 2 mile hurdle division and similar. Like Gaelic Warrior beaten in a King George, for example, but he just came into his own, didn't he, in the Gold Cup?
Yeah, he did. He was brilliant. And of course, a lot of those superstars will be going on to the Punchestown Festival next week, and there'll be full coverage of that across the Racing Post. We've also spent a lot of time writing and talking about affordability checks. Just a quick update on that as we go into our news wrap-up section. Brant Dunshay, the BHA chief executive, he was talking yesterday to Nick Luck on Racing TV about how he's losing patience with the Gambling Commission as we move towards the Gambling Commission putting a decision on affordability checks to its board. Helen Rhodes, who is currently leading the Gambling Commission in the absence of now former Chief Executive Andrew Rhodes, she responded to recent commentary on affordability checks, saying that she thought a lot of it had been ill-informed or inaccurate, which seemed a strange interpretation of what has been said, including by James Noyes, a leading campaigner on gambling matters and a spokesperson or a representative of the Social Market Foundation, who came into the debate last week, giving his voice to the anti-affordability checks position. He was saying that they aren't working at the moment, and the government needs to think again. Whether the government, the Gambling Commission, will think again, only time will tell. Will the BHA think again about the rules in relation to horses who get disqualified for whip offences? That came into the news agenda again last week, Lewis, because the whip review committee, whip referrals committee, announced its latest punishments, one of which went to Patrick O'Brien, who was given a chunky ban for his ride on Laffey, who won the final race on day two of the Grand National Festival. Patrick O'Brien, who used his whip 11 times, four more than the seven allowed, four more than the permitted allowance, earns a horse a DQ. Laffey was unsurprisingly, therefore, disqualified from that race. Mellon was promoted to first. But it again raised that subject, which David Jenny talked about in his column, of is it right that horses are disqualified from these races days after the race and not on the day itself, which means that punters who backed the horse who actually gets promoted to first place don't get paid out on first, and the connections of the eventual winner don't really get their moment in the sun on the victory podium.
So two questions there. Yep. One, will the BHA revisit it? I seriously doubt it. Two, is it right that they don't disqualify on a day? In my opinion, absolutely not.
Yep.
I would be very strongly in David Jennings's corner. I've written about it myself in the past. I just feel that really, I think owners are having the mickey taken out of them. Like, there's two. What we're getting at the moment is two results. We're getting a result for betting and a result for prize money. You can't have two results. No. It can only be one result. The owners who get the prize money deserve their day in the spotlight at the track. They deserve the trophy presentation. And I would take the decision away from the stewards on the day. I'd have someone independently, whose only job it is to watch whip strikes in a race. They count them. Anyone's gone over, they inform the stewards. It's a DQ there and then. And then if you have a Alfonso Legrand sort of situation, you've still got the appeals process. So I know the reason they're doing it, because they don't want the spotlight. They don't want the chat to overshadow, and it would have been, say it had happened on National Day, it would have been something else that people could have pointed at. But you've got to have conviction in your rules, and by pushing it, kicking the can down the road to the next week, you're showing no conviction in those rules. To me, the DQs have got to be on the day, and we've got to put owners who put so much money into the sport first in this situation.
And punters who back the eventual winner as well.
Yeah, it can work two ways of putting it, can't it? That's the thing, but they seem to put there'll be too much confusion over betting ahead of the owners. I just don't get it. What the final result is should be, you should be paid out on the final result, and the owners should also get to celebrate.
Liam, it's 2-0 on that front with Lewis and myself agreeing. What's your position on it?
Yeah, I completely agree. I just think it's unfair on those who put so much time and effort into the sport, from the owners and the trainers' point of view. I just think these decisions, they shouldn't take as long as they've been taking. It kind of makes a bit of a mockery of the system that we're sort of going down. It's just a very, very strange way of kind of dealing with it. And having to wait so long for this to happen, really.
Yeah, it does seem strange. Actually, the Crisfords were involved in one of these stories linked to
Cesarewitch.
Yeah, with Manxham, wasn't it? News last week that Simon and Ed Crisford are parting as a training partnership. They've been incredibly successful in recent times. Simon, the Racing Post first ever Newmarket correspondent back in 1986. You know, all the RP40 stuff was all that we did last week on the Racing Post channels. Simon Crisford will be staying in Newmarket, but Ed Crisford, his young son, is going off to Dubai to train from there.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a sort of a huge opportunity for a young trainer, for Ed to go it alone. Sheikh Ahmed's private trainer in Dubai. Christopher's obviously got a long association with Dubai. They've been incredibly successful out there with their own horses. And now this opportunity's come for Ed. Simon insisted it'll be business as usual in Newmarket, but the sort of Christopher's empire expands to Dubai as well. I think it's a good opportunity. It doesn't have to be forever, and the stable's still there in Newmarket if Ed decides down the line he wants to come back and take that over, but I can see exactly why he's doing it.
Yeah, me too. Liam, we'll just finish off with talk of another train, this time one sadly no longer with us. You were in Kingsclere yesterday at one of the sport's most famous racing yards to celebrate the life of the late great Ian Balding.
Yeah, it was a very touching day with a lot of people there at the yard in Kingsclere Parkhouse Stables. You know, there was great tales of his life, both as a father, as a trainer, as a sports person. Andrew Balding and Claire Balding, his two children, did a wonderful job with the eulogy, sort of talking about his life. You know, there was laughter, there was emotion, and you know, there was a lot of love in the room. You know, there was a lot of people there. There was a great picture that we have in our story of all the apprentices, past and present, at the yard yesterday. I interviewed Frankie Dettori, who had an awful lot of time for the late Ian Balding as well. So, listen, there was a lot of emotion in the room, and everyone did a fantastic job of celebrating the life of a wonderful man.
Yes, and of course Andrew Balding very much still flying the flag for the Balding family from Kingsclere. That then is it for this week's show. Lewis, thank you. Liam, thank you. Thank you for watching. So the jump season ends in Britain on Saturday, and then this time next week we've got Sandown to look back on and the Guineas and Punchestown to look forward to. Until then, bye-bye.